The February cyber attack on Change Healthcare continues to cause prescription delays, and that is stressful on patients and doctors, but not if the doctors are using iCoreRx cloud e-prescribing software. iCoreRx had zero interruption, and iCoreRx is a product of iCore Connect, whose full platform of secure products helps streamline workflow and increase revenue. Check them out at iCoreConnect.com/MGMA.
Hello, everyone. We're so excited to have you here today. My name is Adrienne Lloyd, and I'm the host of the Women in Healthcare podcast with MGMA. And I'm honored to have Rhonda Buchholz, who is a dear colleague and friend of mine, join us. She has been in healthcare a little over 30 years, working largely in the revenue cycle, compliance, leadership space. She is a John Maxwell leadership coach and also is the National Advisory Board president, incoming president for the AAPC, who works a lot with revenue cycle, great resource for your revenue cycle coding teams as well. And I'm just so honored to have Rhonda here. Her current role also is she is the Chief Compliance Officer for Vision Innovation Partners. And so Rhonda, just thank you so much for taking time to join us today. And I can't wait to just hear and share more of your story. We're going to talk a little bit about healthcare quality and innovation, and also just kind of your own leadership journey and advice that you may have for others along the way. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here with you today.
Absolutely. No, I know it's always, always busy. So it's great to have you and have the time. So I'd love to just kind of start off and, you know, really hear from you. What are some of the challenges that in the compliance and regulation space, you know, what are some of the challenges that you're seeing, and how do you think about innovation, and what challenges maybe do you see with innovation in this space? And I know we were just talking before we jumped on officially here about some personal stories we both had in the healthcare, you know, quality or kind of challenges in healthcare quality along the way. So I'd love to just kind of start off with that and go from there.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I absolutely love working in compliance. And when people find that out about me, they usually laugh because I'm not typically a rule follower, right? I'm an innovator. Like, I like to forge ahead. And but I really like compliance work because I think that through compliance, there's a lot of things that we can drive and change for culture. And I think that that's really important for us. I also like the aspect of being able to really help not only the doctors, but our employees and ultimately the patients, because you're going to see a lot, I think, coming out in the next couple of years on quality of care. And so we see a lot of the initiatives that are coming out from the government. And most often, those actually don't even cover quality of care. Since COVID, we've seen a huge increase in complaints against doctors that go straight to the board, to their medical licensing board. And they're usually customer service related things that don't belong there. But then I'm in the position of having to then defend and help my doctors because it goes on their license. They have to investigate every single one of them. So the culture in healthcare has changed a lot, especially since COVID. So the increase of complaints I read in one study has been like 60% higher since 2020, which is just crazy. But for me, from a compliance standpoint, because I've been in healthcare leadership for a long time, and for me, if you can create a good culture, then you get people that will follow, and you get people to be compliant, and you get good workplaces where you feel comfortable. You can speak up, you can make changes, right? Everybody feels comfortable and confident. And I like that because early on in leadership, you know, I was taught to just make the decisions and take your heart out of it. All right. You leave everything at the door. You don't bring anything in with you. And so you were taught to make those tough decisions without really thinking about the human factor. And what I really discovered is, and especially for me, it doesn't work. You need to have empathy, right? Somewhere empathy needs to, and it doesn't make you a weak leader. And
Right.
so for me, especially kind of as I grew into to leadership and stopped questioning myself, I realized that I very much empathy played into who I was as a human being, and that I needed to be able to include that more in my leadership decisions. And that helps, I think, a lot when you can understand what someone's going through. Might not change the outcome, right? But at least it gives you common ground and it gives you starting ground and an ability to kind of move forward on it. I was at a great healthcare compliance enforcement conference in DC earlier this year. I guess not earlier this year, late last year. And there were a lot of people from the government, from different officials, and overwhelmingly it came back to patient care and quality of care with a lot of their initiatives. And so I think that that all kind of ties in together for us.
No, I think that's so huge, and I know you and I've talked about this over the years as well. And I see it time and time again when I'm working with leaders. And I know as you work as a coach and consultant, you see the same thing too, as well as in your own practices. But I think we just the leaders really try to take on so much, and most, all of us get in healthcare because we're so passionate. We want to see great quality outcomes. We want to see efficiencies. We want to see, margins to be able to generate like revenue so we have the latest and greatest technology and can pay the staff and physicians appropriately and all of those things. But I think a lot of times it really comes down to that vulnerability and that transparency of like, where are we? Where are you trying to go, and engaging the team in that? And I think it's even more important today. Some of the groups I've worked with have, their good news is staffing has rebounded quite a lot, and so most groups are not having the significant gaps in staffing that they were, kind of during the height and right after COVID. But they have a lot of new staff. And when you have a lot of new team members or new physicians, really getting them to the being in that core alignment of like what is most important, the needs of the patient come first. This is how we take care. This is how we communicate with each other. It's so important to do that. And I think a lot of times people are just right, rightfully so, they're trying to go through the mechanics of getting the operations moving, staffing, plugging the holes. But it really is like those moments we can, as leaders, bring our teams together and really have those conversations of like, hey, this went wrong. Like, how do we keep this from happening? Or, this isn't really at the level we want it to be. Like, how do we get there? And I don't know, are there any scenarios that you've had where you've kind of been going through those discussions with your teams or groups you've worked with?
Yeah, I mean, so many because healthcare has become so overregulated, and it's just been crazy. And so a lot of times we teach to the technologies that we have to use, and we don't teach the why. And when you don't know the why, then you miss so much. So most practices that I work with, both at VIP and when I do consulting, use online check-in or kiosks or something to that effect, because it does so many beneficial transactional items for us. But when people don't understand the why, you get those prompts up on your screen. So let's say you have your patient. I was patient this morning, right? I go to the kiosk at my doctor's office. Especially being the first of the year, you're going to get those prompts that come up. All of the systems give you a warning that comes up and an alert. One example that I use, because I see it happen all the time, is it'll give you a warning that says patient is a managed care, right? It has managed care. Employees just click through it because they don't even know what managed care is. And we're so busy teaching to the technologies that we forget to explain the whys. Right. And it's the same when you get back through to the clinical care and those side of things as well. And so it's really kind of trying to teach those employees to take that step back, because everybody's still burnt out in healthcare, and just trying to get through the days, including the doctors, and reminding them about the patient experience. And the why of, hey, this is actually why we have to do these types of things. So one of my most favorite doctors to work with laughs at me because he would probably tell you that he does not think he's my favorite, but he is. And he is, because he's driven, but he's reasonable. And so he's constantly moving, which is a target for me always because I need to know, right? So he'll come to me and say, I'm going to start doing this. And I'll say, can we talk about that? Like, let's talk it through. And he laughs because he's like, that's your way of saying no. I'm like, no. But right, I don't want to say no. I want to tell you how we can do it, but let's figure out and we'll have those conversations where, and those I think are the funnest to have where you can debate. And I'll say, okay, but let's look at it from the patient side of things and the patient experience. What does that look like for the patient? And so because we've been able to have those kind of good collaborations, we've been able to transform and change the way he's been delivering healthcare, which is just it's been amazing and it's fun for me.
That's fantastic. I think that's the vision and the why. And then the other piece I would add to that that I've seen is the particularly related to technology or using like outside services or even different types of roles of personnel is I think it's you've got to be very intentional about looking at the process and like what is this technology, this other solution going to serve? Like what role? And then how do the rest of our team members need to function around it? And some of it's some of it's like creating, I Lean Six Sigma, standard work or like the training. Some of it's that, but some of it's too is just really allaying the fears of like, we're not bringing this in to like get rid of jobs or, I mean, there may be some impacts, but like overall, we're really trying to improve the process for the patient. We're trying to improve the quality, data we're capturing or, improve our billing or whatever that is. And, but helping the team not only think through that before you go and buy something and add it on, because as we know, we were talking about this a little earlier too, we can dive into it, getting technology to talk to each other. It's always.
Right.
So, really having that
More
thought process,
technology, more problems.
right? Thoughtful process of like, do we really need this? And then is this the right technology? And then how do we fit the technology into what we want to have happen versus just, adding it on top and having to work around it and kind of being a slave to it, if you will. I think particularly as, AI continues to impact our space as something. Are you seeing AI kind of come into either the revenue cycle space or quality or, your front desk areas or just even maybe these other like non-traditional type services?
So we start to see a little bit of AI come into rev cycle with different offerings. And I don't want to say it's true AI, but it's AI-like. And so there are some that are coming out with those types of things. The problem with AI at a clinic level, right at the doctor level, is the PHI pieces of it. Most of the vendors are in beta. They want to control the data. And as a healthcare provider, you got to be really careful with those beta agreements. We were just reviewing some not too long ago, and you have to really be careful because they're doing recordings, right, of the patient experiences. There's so many laws around consent for recording of patients, and each state varies, so you have to really do a lot whether or not it's a two-party consent. Some of them, right, are just a one party. It's a lot. So I think it's going to be a while before it really hits at least our smaller doctor's offices, right, with the standard. You might see it more in your Epics and that type of thing, but I think it's going to take a while for it to actually hit us. And especially like in the ophthalmology world with the smaller vendors and that type of thing.
Are there?
What I have been seeing a lot of though, when we talk about technologies where we try to streamline and try to make things run more efficient for clinics, and even as we grow, is what I like to call knowledge gap. Because as soon as you standardize a process and you take it offsite or right, you consolidate it somehow, when that team stops doing that job, right, then they lose that knowledge. So let's use rev cycle as an example because it's just an easy one to use, right? You decide you're gonna have consolidate rev cycle because it makes sense, and it does make sense. But you pull those people out of that practice, and now you have someone that can't answer billing questions, right? Now you have someone that when the front desk has a question about an insurance company, they don't know. They don't have someone to explain managed care to them. They don't have someone to explain all of that. And then as you get generational from that, right, as people transition in and out of that clinic that used to run independently, you continue to lose that knowledge. And that knowledge gap can really can really hurt the practice at the end of the day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's, I think it's more than the transactional impact too, right? It's like the pervasive impact to the team. And I always talk about like the frustration moments, those moments when like they're doing things that aren't at the top of their licensure. They're having to ask those questions again. They're just feeling lost and feeling like they're not helping the patient in that moment because of some barrier. And I think it really is something that we kind of have to, I don't know if there's always a perfect solution for it, but definitely something we have to watch out for. But
Yeah, and I just think it's so important to look at things from a patient perspective when you're thinking through those types of things. We'll use a call center as an example. It should not take you 10 prompts to get to the department that you need to get to, right? And so you start to build these prompts, and then when you're building the prompts, you're like, oh, wait, I want to sell these kinds of services. Let me route this first. And you forget about the patient experience, but and they're frustrated. And so you really have to look at it from a patient perception. And it goes back to the kiosks. If you have a team that is now has two monitors in front of them to monitor your practice management system and your kiosk information, how are they supposed to greet that patient when they come in? And
plus
when you don't,
phones too.
right? And when you don't greet that patient, it's a bad experience for that patient from the second they walk through the door.
Yeah, I think that's really key, and I think it'll be an ongoing discussion. I'm excited about some of the innovations, and I you've seen, technology be very helpful. I think there's still so much potential, but it's like, how do we do it in a way that is making it, a better experience, safer, yes, more efficient, but also that we're not losing the personal touch and experience in healthcare. And
So I was actually working with one clinic. It was a large one, and they had multiple like specialties with inside that clinic. And so they were using kiosks to check patients in, but then the biggest complaint that was coming through on their patient surveys was the wait times. And then the doctors of they're not here, they're late, we can't find them. And so they actually had like it looked communal, but they had different waiting areas for each of the patients. Patients didn't know where to go because the front desk staff used to tell them, go sit in this area, the blue area, right? Or the red area. And so when they were doing it at the kiosk, they didn't know where to go sit. So they'd go sit wherever. So we were actually able then to streamline the technology that when they checked in based on the doctor, it would tell them where to go get seated,
go to blue.
right? So yeah,
Yeah.
you just got to think through those types of things.
And yeah, I think that's, in anything that we do, that feedback loop, right? Like getting the feedback loop from our patients, from our staff, from our physicians, what's working, what's not working, what are those things? And then kind of starting to break it down. We're like, okay, well, what if we could do this? And, that innovation. I think innovation in healthcare, we often think about it being these like huge scale changes. And often it doesn't have to be. It really can be just creating that culture of like, well, what about this and what about that? And, positive questioning attitude. So I think that's.
So I just, and I, especially in my compliance role, but even in an operational role, like the comment that I have made for as long as I can remember is when you only base decisions on revenue, you'll always make the wrong choices because your decisions can't just be revenue based. Obviously, to keep our clinics going, we have to have that function. We have to look at things. How can we make more money? How can we look at those types of things? But it can't just be, it has to be about the whole global, because otherwise you just lose in the end. I was actually working with a doctor, and I had said to him, so tell me, like, why are you bringing this patient back and this type of patient? And he's like, well, because, and so a long time ago, they had gotten advice from a consultant that said, hey, you could bill for this visit. Let's do this. And I said, well, it's a math problem. One, it's not kosher, right? You just don't want to do it. But two, it becomes a math problem. So do the data. Let's look at the data and figure out how much you actually getting paid for that. Because if we eliminate that visit, you've now got a new consult with testing. And so when you look at the math, right, it's a math problem. But not only is it a math problem, it's now you've increased patient satisfaction because you're not making them come in more. You're not making them do other things, right? It's that whole global piece of it. And so that's why, like I said, my favorite doctor, like I go, Well, let's talk it through. Let's look at it from all aspects. I'm all about money, don't get me wrong, because I want paid just like everybody else does. But it cannot be the only driver in healthcare. It can't.
Oh, and I think it's, I was at Mayo Clinic and then at Duke, and then I work with a variety of groups. But one of the groups I'm working with now is a surgical specialty, and they have some competition coming in town. And so they're looking at, the types of patients that might start to, get captured by the rest of the other market. And one of the first conversations is like, well, who are those patients that you feel like you can serve best? That your surgeons, your physicians really want to focus on and really, driving and let's create the experience for those types of patients. Maybe you don't need to take care of every single one, or maybe you take care of some other ones in different ways, whether it's more telehealth or, maybe if those are more maintenance, there's different types of providers you can, just thinking through it. Obviously, again, trying to make sure we're getting the best quality and experience, but, thinking strategically about how do you best serve that population that you're trying to, and kind of working backwards from there. And I think a lot of times, it's those moments of slowing down and asking those questions that, just like you said, can you help, two or three more patients, really create life changes, for their personal health, while you're still taking care of your other ones, but just doing that in a more routine, routine way. So.
Yeah, and I love that thought process, Adrian, right? Like, what do you do well? Like, what do you do well? And then not only what do you do well, what do we need to do better, right? So it's not coming up with all of these kind of crazy things that are going to get us in trouble in the long run. Well, let's ship our patients in. Let's offer them transportation. Let's do this, right? Let's do co-manage. Well, like, how about let's just provide really good quality of care. Because at the end of the day, that's really what's going to drive your business, right? If you're not providing good quality of care, your competitor wins every time.
And I do love some. I think with telehealth, there's lots of opportunities there to continue to expand. And maybe that's some of what happens before all the new, technology innovation comes our way. But, just thinking like, how do we continue to take care of those patients in different models? That because not every patient wants to drive in, for that routine check. Not every patient needs to. What are we really doing to create the actual value and the change? Well, I'd love to just shift gears a little bit. And here, I know that you are doing, leadership training. You present a lot and speak, and of course, you're involved with a couple significant organizations that are also very focused on, leadership and just personal development. Like, how did you get into the leadership training and coaching space, and what do you, what really helped you throughout kind of your career journey, and what else would you kind of advise current or new leaders to really consider as they're looking to enter this world that we know is very rewarding, but also can be somewhat taxing as we go through.
Yeah, so for me, especially when I got into John Maxwell, I actually that came about at the very beginning of COVID, and when I kind of sat back and reflected and said, what can I do to make a difference? Very much throughout my career, that is what drives me. I like to make a difference, and if I ever if, when I've left an organization, it honestly has always been down to that fact. I felt like I was done or I couldn't make a difference. And so making a difference is extremely important to me. And then just trying to make life better for people, through my own struggles in life and even in early leadership and those types of things. One of the things that I tried to always do is kind of do self-reflection. And so, after you would have a project or an event, like something, what could I have done better? And reflect back on that and then work with my team on, okay, here's where I messed up. Here's what we could have done better. And it started to really build leadership. I'm a huge fan of John Maxwell's. He's just a great influence. So I really wanted to, especially because in compliance, I do need people to follow me and I need to understand them quickly in order to be able to do that. Because if I start off on the wrong foot, it's really hard to gain that momentum or that trust back. And trust is so important in our organizations. So for me, learning more about how people tick, and what to look for and to be able to pick up on that, has helped me be able to bridge employees and get followers so that I can get them to include me, right? No one's going, I don't want her at these meetings, right? It's to get more inclusive and to get people to have conversations and feel safe and comfortable and getting to know them quickly, especially if I have to deliver audit results. I need to know really quickly how it's going to be most effective with that doctor or whoever I'm working with. And so for me, learning about those types of things was extremely important because it's things that I struggled with in the past because we all want to communicate the way it would be work for us. And that's not an effective way of communicating with people. And so it was really kind of learning about that and delving into it. And then I've been just having an amazing time being able to coach young leaders and businesswomen that are trying to get into the space, either consulting or just healthcare overall, and helping them grow as leaders. And it's for me just a lot of fun to be able to see that growth and see them become happy with themselves and satisfied.
What's I would say, the only constant in healthcare is change. But it's one thing that you've seen that basically, pretty much the same as when you started, any themes that you continue to see or just experience yourself?
Yeah, so those of us that work in healthcare, a lot of them don't want to change. And it's really intriguing to me because I've done so many of the DISC assessments. And so when you see that, it's like, okay, now I get it. So a lot of people are driven to healthcare because it does change, but it's usually timed change. And so you can anticipate when things are going to change, which makes it a little bit tolerable for those transactional people that like that and that are slow to change. I like change. I like to innovate, right? I like to so it also helps me understand those that don't. So I can slow myself down just a little bit for it. There's a lot of change that is coming into healthcare, and the regulations aren't gonna lighten up. I was actually on a webinar at the beginning of December with Weedy, and there were several of us that were on there in response to the ONC request for information for ICD-11. And so one of my favorite stories to tell about that whole thing, right? When people are asking me about it, is I'll show you a picture of my high school prom with my then boyfriend, now husband, right? That's when ICD-10 was introduced. And then I'll show you a picture of my family with my husband, who has much less hair. And I have much more everything, right? So at my daughter's wedding, that's the year it was implemented. And so I tell everybody, like, listen, change is going to happen and those types of things. But one of the questions they asked was, the providers were so adamant and were so against ICD-10. How do we talk about the ROI? Well, there is an ROI for IC for diagnosis coding for a physician. There just isn't. However, right, if you can simplify things. And so one of the questions that was asked was, well, how could we get the doctors on board this time? And I said, get rid of managed care. It's that simple. We are so overregulated right now that it's absolutely ludicrous. I just had to fight on behalf of one of my doctors, Adrian, because that was for a managed care organization, so a Medicare Advantage plan, because this particular plan also has a healthcare delivery arm. And unlike traditional Medicare, for any non-covered services or statutorily excluded, they want us to fill out a form and get prior approval for a statutorily excluded service. It's cosmetic. I should not have to do that, right? Should not have to do it. But not only that, remember, we have the Transparency in Healthcare Act. So they're required, when they get that prior approval, to send a letter to the patient saying, hey, you have benefits or you don't, but also you can get the services cheaper here, 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 and here. And guess what? It's all their locations. So they're actually making my doctor have more administrative burdens so that they can sell their services more. That right there is what's wrong with healthcare. And so the Medicare Advantage plans, and I said that on the webinar, right? Like, get rid of the Medicare Advantage. There's no benefit to the patient. It's more for them. It delays their healthcare. There's definitely no benefit to the physician. The only benefit is to the health plans and their pockets, right? So, I had actively fought them on, and so it was funny because their quality department was like, "We don't send letters." I'm like, "For sure you do, because you have to, right? It's a law. It's a regulation." So it's just, there's a lot of change like that that's coming that practices need to arm themselves with and need to be aware of so that they can fight it. A health plan should not be allowed to steal business away or use those opportunities as a way to solicit for their own organizations. There should be some type of regulation there. It's
Well, and that
crazy.
I think is where, whether it's MGMA or AAPC or, your specialty specific association, I think a lot of times,
Right.
particularly, the practice administrators, like, don't try to go it alone. This is where you can't
You
possibly
can't go it alone. Exactly.
fight
Yeah.
it on your own, and nor can you even understand it on your own and try to, process all the things that are happening. So reach out to whichever group is most helpful for you. But I think that's just so important to not only see what's coming and ideally be part of the change and getting ahead of it and trying to adjust it if possible, but at least understanding with your physicians what that impact may be, because it's, yeah, agreed. It's just,
Yeah. So for me, right, like again, it's getting that following. It's getting the doctors to understand, I need you to make sure that you do these types of things and really working with them. Because I think quality is just so important in healthcare. You and I were talking before this about personal stories, and we were just recently impacted by a quality of care issue with my father-in-law. And so, it just really makes you take a step back and reassess and just think things through of what does need to change in healthcare.
yeah, I think all of us have at least one story, whether it's our immediate family or someone that we know that had an outcome that was less than ideal and less than what should have happened. And whether it was the right patient, the right provider, the right diagnosis, the right care at the right time, like, and I think the more that we can have those conversations, I think, it's not to be punitive. You mentioned, like, there's a lot more complaints coming through since COVID, and I think people are more sensitive, and people are also more aware and to some degree more fearful, right? Like, we saw a lot of things happen during COVID that were not necessarily any fault of any one of the, healthcare systems or providers. We were all trying to figure out what we could with what we had. But I think it's just made patients and consumers that much more nervous and anxious, rightfully so, around, like, understanding what services are available, what care they're going to receive, and that as leaders, like, we have to be attuned to that to understand, how can we clearly set expectations? How can we improve those experience and those outcomes as much as possible? And when something does go wrong, actually not only spend the time with our teams to diagnose what could we have done differently, but be able to hopefully, repair that trust with the patient to some degree, at least in sharing, what we've learned and what we're going to be able to do differently. I think that's, a lot of us as patients, when we've gone through that, we don't necessarily, expect, like, remuneration per se or any of those things, but you want to understand that it's not going to happen to someone else. And that's,
Yeah, I think that's my biggest piece of advice is understand the full global picture, not just the piece that you're the most comfortable with or that you've done in the past, but understand the full global and the impacts to everyone. So because that's the only way you can make good decisions for the business and start to affect change in healthcare.
Rhonda, I could talk to you all day. What's one piece of advice, as you think about new and current leaders, and they're just kind of coming in and navigating? And we talked early on, like, we're all so passionate about wanting to make the whole system, our whole organizations, our entire teams better. But what advice do you have, having navigated your last, 30 years, not only as a leader, but as a association leader and presenter and speaker and coach and all the things, as well as a mom and now wife and grandmother and all the things. Is there anything that you would recommend, leaders just really focus on to help them kind of navigate through it personally while they're taking care of everyone else?
Yeah, I think all of us as leaders, and what I think I've learned in the past few years is to be better listeners, and to slow down and not have a judgment in our brain already, to actually listen and hear what that other person is saying so that we can then, do it. I tell everyone, and I've learned this because I would jump in, I'd have an employee complaint, or I'd have someone say, this always happens to me. And you jump in and you try to save the day and you find out that the data doesn't prove that, right? So I always tell everybody, active listening and data is your backup, because the data is the only thing at the end of the day that you can really rely on and make sure that you have. And you can get data a lot of ways. And some of it's through Lean Six Sigma and just timing things and looking at production and looking at those types of things. But there's also data that you can pull from your systems and your reports and look at that whole global picture of it, because you need to lead with empathy, but you need to always have the data. And that's extremely important for us to be able to affect change.
I love a few things that you said there, listening, you mentioned self-reflection too, and slowing down. And I think, even those, and I think doing all of that with both the questioning attitude and, but also just with grace, particularly towards ourselves, I think is so, so huge. I think it's easy to feel like we could have done more. And sometimes that's true, but often we did all that we could with what we had at that time. And so,
yeah. And I should have said that too, right? Sometimes you self-reflect and you go, there's nothing, right? That's okay. Right. But yeah.
That day I gave everything, I was worried about this or worried about that. So my mind wasn't 100%, in that moment. And sometimes we just have to give ourselves permission to be that. And same things with our teams, right? Like they're all going through that. And as we talked early on, I think that we bring that alignment of vision and the culture back together, where people are really supporting each other and feeling comfortable, and that collaboration and teamwork, it really can help create those conversations, which allow us to talk about what went wrong and how to make it better and diagnosing the problem and so forth. So, well, this was great.
Thank you so much for taking it.
It was too. And we'll make sure to have your contact information in there. And please, if, if you have questions for Rhonda, please reach out. I know she's a great resource. This is just kind of the tip of the iceberg with what you get with her and, both the warmth as well as the straight shooter. So I love all of that. And just thank you so much for taking your time. And perhaps we'll have you back again on a future episode. But thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Most physicians don't have the opportunity to learn the business of medicine. What docs don't get taught, physician business training is a course developed by MGMA and administrators from Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. This interactive course provides in-depth physician business training that can drive personal and organizational success. Purchase now for yourself or your organization at physicianbusinesstraining.com and earn 8 hours of CME credit. Again, go to physicianbusinesstraining.com to purchase and to learn more. Are you tired of dealing with time-consuming processes and outdated strategies? It's time for a change. Introducing Laserfish, the leading platform for optimizing process automation and data analytics. With Laserfish, you can transform your organization into a technology-driven powerhouse, ready to tackle any disruption that comes your way. Laserfish allows you to strategically optimize workflow automation so you can revamp cost-inefficient initiatives across your organization. Free up your staff's time so they can focus on more meaningful work. So don't let outdated processes hold you back. Unlock the power of Laserfish and take control of your organization's future. Visit laserfish.com today and learn how it can help you achieve efficiency, resilience, and success. Again, go to laserfish.com.